The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
Standing here in the foyer for CFP up here in Seattle. I just found out this conference was taking place up here. Had no idea since just moving to Seattle just a few months ago. And then I'm like, wow, there are going to be all these geeks standing around and talking about issues that definitely mean something, specifically privacy. And Jake and I were having a slight discussion, and he brought up a Birds of a Feather session that would be happening tonight, saying, lamenting the fact that we unfortunately would not be able to make it, and said the word Tor. At which point, an individual turned around and said, "Hey, Tor," then we started to discuss exactly what Tor was. So instead of me trying to explain what it is, since I'm just learning about it, we thought we'd talk with Roger, is it Dingledine?
Yes.
And talk about Tor, which apparently stands for something, T-O-R.
Mm-hmm. The Onion Router, or the Onion Routing System, which I can explain a little bit more in a bit if... shall I do that now? Okay, so Tor is basically what we call an overlay network on the internet. Tor is a peer-to-peer network that has about 150 servers right now all around the world. We just got a fifth continent yesterday. We've got one in Brazil now. And what you do is you route your traffic through two or three Tor servers, which means that no single Tor server is able to figure out who is talking to who. And so you've got a bunch of people who want to browse the web or do instant messaging or something, and they want to do that such that the web servers don't end up with logs of exactly who has come from where and how much they looked at and which pages they looked at and so on. AOL just put out its new privacy policy, and if you dig into the fine print, you find a little statement saying all content you write on any of our services is owned by us. You waive any right to privacy. We get to make any derivative works of your content that we like because it's our content now. Everything you type into AIM, they track, they log, they attribute to you. You may not want to associate everything you do with their logs and have them knowing exactly all your interests and who you talk to and when you're online.
Or what I had for dinner last night is. That's usually what my IM conversations are comprised of. Sure. So this is kind of like a global anonymizer, so to speak, a decentralized anonymizer service.
Yes.
And open source?
Yes, free software.
How long has it been around?
The Onion Routing Project itself started at the Navy in the mid-90s, 95, 96. And I got involved in 2001 when they were trying to figure out how to deploy it and how to actually make a reasonable system that was more secure. And we pretty much scrapped the old design and came up with a newer design that's more decentralized and more scalable. And we actually have free software now that goes with it. The actual network has been deployed since October 2003, and we've been slowly growing it and getting more robust and having more features.
Cross-platform, I'd assume.
Yes, it runs on, it started out on Linux and BSD, and now it works on Solaris and OS X and Windows. So somebody ported it to IRIX a little while ago because somebody runs IRIX still.
So now it sounds pretty technical. I mean, you're obviously talking about, you know, anonymizing your activities online. How easy would it be for, let's say, someone who wasn't as proficient with the keyboard to be able to use a service like this?
In theory, you don't have to do anything new at all. Once we have everything set up, this should just run in the background, and it should intercept your connections that are going out to the web server and make sure that they go out safely rather than directly. In practice, usability is a really tricky thing, especially in terms of security software. So what we're working on right now is getting the architecture right and getting the code to be stable and fast and so on. And at the same time, we need to work on installers. We need to work on ways that you can easily interface with it. The Tor software itself is just a SOX proxy. So you can go into your Mozilla or Firefox and say, edit preferences, proxy over here. And this means that you never have to see that you're using Tor. It just works. But at the same time, we really need to come up with more interfaces, an actual graphical interface that gives you a sense of how healthy your Tor connection is and whether it's doing what you want to be doing. We're actually thinking of doing a contest. Okay, so let me back up. Tor is the first research project, the first technology project, to be funded by both the United States Department of Defense and also the Electronic Frontier Foundation. So that's the hook that makes people say, well, wait a minute, what exactly are you talking about here? And the reason for that is they both need the security properties it provides. When I talk to geeks, I say I'm working on an anonymity system. When I talk to my parents and grandparents, I'm working on a privacy system. When I talk to Walmart and Google and so on, this is business security. This is not about hiding where you're going or coming from. This is about protecting your business intelligence from competitors. They want to know what websites you look at. They want to know what your interests are, who you're sending mail to. This is something that businesses really need to protect. They have a responsibility to protect this information. And then when you talk to governments, it's the same sort of thing, but they think of it as traffic analysis resistance rather than this privacy stuff. And they need it. I mean, I'll give you an example. There are soldiers in the Middle East right now, Navy people in the Middle East right now, using Tor to be able to communicate back home in a way that doesn't let the people locally realize that they're Americans working for the U.S. military. And on the far side of things, there are people using this to research cancer or diabetes without having their employer say, wait a minute, the health costs of these guys are going to go up next year, why don't I fire them now? So there are a lot of different uses along the spectrum that these privacy systems can be used for.
Now, how stable is this software? You're running it on a local machine, and it's going out to a remote server. I know this past week we've had issues with Comcast DNS servers going down, and that caused a headache. Have there been any hiccups with Tor to this point on that kind of scale?
Well, certainly it's a free software, open development system. We've been working on it for a couple of years. We'll be working on it for many more. There was a bug a little while ago where if the server advertises that it can handle a whole lot of bandwidth, then all the other servers freak out and crash. Except the clients didn't freak out and crash, just the servers. So there were still about 20,000 users out there, and it started out having 150 servers, and then it was 100 servers, and then it was 50 servers. So that was pretty bad. But we fixed that bug that evening and had a new version out the next day. So it's an ongoing thing. I mean, certainly stability is a big question, and you got to get it right. Otherwise, people are going to stop using your system.
So how would this differ from the product that comes to my mind, Proximitron, as a go-between?
Yep. Well, Proximitron, I think, is a web proxy that you run locally, and it makes sure that you don't accept bad cookies, and it maybe makes sure that you don't see advertisements you don't want to see, and you don't end up sending that request to DoubleClick where they can keep track of where you are. Tor and Proximitron work really well together. The goal of Tor is to make sure that the communication channel is anonymous, is to make sure that where you're coming from is not associated with you. What you say, the data over the channel, that's up to you. Tor doesn't care. So it makes perfect sense to be completely authenticated with the other side, yet be anonymous. I know for sure that I'm connecting to you. This goes back to the CIA case. The CIA guy in the Middle East really wants to know that the guy he's connecting to is, in fact, the CIA mail server in Maryland. And the CIA mail server in Maryland really does want to know that this is a CIA agent, but he doesn't want somebody observing him locally to know where he's connecting to. And the mail server doesn't want anybody observing it locally to know where the people connecting to it are in the world right now. So it makes perfect sense to have an authenticated anonymous communication. On the other hand, if you actually want to protect from the other side who you are, then you can choose to use a system like Privoxy or Proximitron or any of the other scrubbing web proxies to take care of the data that you're sending and make sure that's safe also.
Now, you mentioned a number a few minutes ago. You said 20,000 users. Is that your proliferation?
It's an anonymity network. I have no idea how many users I have. A while ago, we stopped logging the web hits, and we stopped paying attention to what websites, which web pages people look at. So I have no idea how many people have downloaded it at this point. In January, due to how the network was architectured at that point, I could look at how many people were connected to my Tor server and then multiply that by the total number of Tor servers and guess how many users there were right then. And we figured there are maybe 15,000 or 20,000 people running Tor right then as clients. But since then, I've made it so that you can't estimate as easily because clients only stay connected for a little while and servers hang up pretty quickly after you use them. So it's harder now to estimate how many users there are. But it could be 20,000, it could be 50,000, it could be 5,000. It's an anonymity network. We don't want to know.
Now, thinking about this from, say, a feature usability perspective of, say, like Yahoo Local Search, if you're using this, does that effectively kill any targeting that a Yahoo Local Search or a Google Local Search type thing might have in terms of the, let's say AdSense, Google AdSense. I'm shifting over to Google from Yahoo there, but Google AdSense has an ability to, if you're doing like a local search, to pull in ads that are related to the area that you're searching. Now, if I'm anonymizing myself in terms of where I'm geographically located, does that effectively break that kind of a system?
Well, there are two pieces to that. One of them is that they could look at the actual data that you give them. You're going to say, I want coffee shops in Seattle. So they can take that information and say, well, I bet he's in Seattle. And they could give you ads based on that assumption. And on the other hand, they could say, well, the IP he's coming from is in Japan. And he's asking about these coffee shops. So maybe I'll tell him about Japanese coffee shops in Seattle. With Tor, the goal of Tor is to put everybody on a level playing field, make sure that everybody's on neutral ground to start with. And this means that they can't know you're in Japan. In fact, basically, when you're coming out of Tor, you come from whatever IP you happen to choose as your exit point, and that could be in Japan, it could be in Brazil, it could be in Greece. So when you go to Google, you get Google as you would if you were in that country. So you get Google Greece or Google Japan, and you get Google in Greek or Japanese or Spanish or French or Norwegian or Swedish or Thailand. And so on. And so Google does geolocation to try to give you a more personal experience, which is a neat feature when you're demoing Tor, because you say, look, I'm going to Google again, observe that it thinks you're in all these different places in the world.
But you can geographically choose your exit point then in terms of, say I'm in the United States, but I want to pretend I'm from Sweden or whatever.
Yes, you can.
So in theory, then I can see where there could be a usability issue where if I want to anonymize, but at the same time, let's say I'm a subscriber to Microsoft's MSN Music service, which is only currently functional in the United States and a couple other countries. If I was to select an anonymizing service in one of those countries unsupported, it would probably think I was coming from there and redirect me and not let me actually participate in the traffic.
Yes, that's probably true. On the other hand, there are good features for being able to do this as well. Think back to the elections when the Republicans' website gave you an error and said, I'm sorry, something messed up, you can't have the website, when you went to it from outside the United States. And I read that and thought, well, wait a minute. So I went and checked, and I looked at it from inside the U.S., and I looked at it from the outside the U.S., and I said, oh, yeah, that's true. And so in this way, you can actually discover what sort of censorship is happening on the internet and be able to route around it.
So then you're just going to continue to let this grow? You're looking for new servers, more bandwidth?
Yes, certainly. We need more users. Not only do we need more servers to help grow the capacity of the network, but we also need more users, because part of the goal of this is to get enough different cover traffic and different sorts of people using the system. Particularly, we need to build a reputation for having reasonable, ordinary, normal citizens using the system. Because if it's only used by people who have cancer, then it will become known as the system that you use to try to hide the fact that you have cancer. And so we need a wide variety and diversity of users in order for people to get the privacy that they're looking for.
What's your official title with the project?
I'm the lead. We don't have an official title.
Evangelist?
Well, I'm the guy who started writing the Tor code. I'm the guy who is in charge of the project from that perspective.
What's it written in?
C. The Tor code is... the same code is either a client or a server, depending on how you configure it. We've got about 30,000 lines of C right now. It's all in user space, so you don't have to be root. Zero Knowledge, which is a company in Canada, had a system previous to this called the Freedom Network, which is quite similar, except you had to be root, and you had to mess with your kernel and install a kernel shim, and then that kernel shim they had to be specific to the kernel version, so when a new kernel comes out, then they had to have a new, and then, so that was bad. So we're totally user space, which means that you can install it anywhere you like, whether you have root or not, and it's easy to set up, and it's just a SOX proxy.
So then anybody, in theory, as you put it, could do it.
We've got a lot of users.
Where is it being hosted right now? In terms of the code, can it be found on SourceForge or FreshMeat?
We've got a FreshMeat entry because somebody wanted to set one up, so I delegated to him to deal with that. Tor.eff.org, or you can Google for Tor and ignore the publisher.
So you're not quite the number one TOR yet?
Hey, we were number 20 for a while, and then number 10, and now we're number 3. Eventually, we'll become more popular than the other Tor, but give us a couple more years.
You think so, or will that be completely anonymous?
We'll see. Google juice is a mysterious thing.
Yes, it is. Roger, thanks for your time and efforts.
Thank you.
The Windows Media stream for the live broadcast of The Chris Perillo Show is provided by Limelight Networks. Listen to the live Chris Perillo Show in Windows Media Player. Download the latest version of the player for Mac and Windows users at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.